Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is our producer, Lee Cantor, and my good buddy, Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
Not much, Stone. How are you this morning?
I am doing well. I spent a lot of the weekend doing the honey-do list, and I'm just not used to that, so there's a little bit of a hitch in my get-along. I'm moving kind of slow, but looking forward to a good show.
How is the honey?
She's doing fine. I put her on a plane this morning, and I've got her working all week.
Outstanding. That's the way it should be, right?
Yeah.
So you and I can actually go out and play?
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a good week. In fact, we're going to do some traveling this week. We're going all the way to Birmingham tomorrow,
all the way to Birmingham tomorrow.
To see a client's client.
See a client's client. Should be a fun meeting.
Yeah. Maybe we'll make some money.
I think so.
All right.
We're also going to be hitting the road soon. We got the Video Dust Jacket Tour. We got, what's on the roster? We got Charlotte coming up. We got Miami, Austin, Texas.
San Jose and Philadelphia, because that wife I told you about, I know she's got consulting gigs in both of those cities, so we got to put them.
So she's going to put you in the baggage
section? Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, we'll do some of our stuff on IBM's nickel.
I like it.
That's just good business, man.
It is a good business strategy.
We've got a great show this morning as well. First up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning is a gentleman by the name of Gareth Young. And aside from being a marvelous author, and we're going to learn a great deal about the book that he now has out, he's also a successful businessman, entrepreneur, and an ordained and practicing Zen priest. Welcome to the show, Gareth.
Good morning, and thank you. You've done your research.
Well, it sounds like we've got plenty to talk about, but I'd love to start with this book. Tell us a little bit about this this book, what compelled you to write it, and what kind of reactions you're getting from folks.
Compelled to write it was characters walking around in my head. It's kind of a funny thing. You just get these people showing up who, in a way, they represent part of my past, but in a way, they're just different people. And when they start talking loud enough and start acting out, I'd sit down at the computer and start writing, and they just live out their lives. It's a fascinating and extraordinary experience.
Now, this is the first book that you've released, is that true?
It's the first one I've published. There's two more. One I hope to publish, or I expect to publish early next year, and the other one probably a year out.
So what was the real inspiration behind this one?
My wife's family is from the mountains of North Carolina. I've been over here from the UK for close to 20 years now, so this is as close to home as anywhere, I guess.
I didn't think that was a North Carolina accent. Did you, Todd?
It's not.
The rural accents will get you every time. It's from the south of the UK. So I've spent an awful lot of time up in the mountains of North Carolina, and have grown to love that part of the country very much. And some of the culture and the life has just seeped into me, and these people start doing strange things. And as I say, once they start talking loud enough and living loud enough, off they go on the page.
If I had a dollar for every corporate executive who said, boy, I wish I could just stop and write, and they actually did it, we wouldn't have to do this silly radio show. But what was the thing that finally got you to do it, and why you're the envy of most people in corporate America right now?
It's at one level, it's just not hard. You've just got to sit down and do it. I get up every morning, and I spend an hour writing. I get up early, and it's kind of my personal time before the day starts.
And you find that doesn't impact or compromise your busy professional schedule?
Quite the opposite. I mean, some people, they go parachute jumping or water skiing or golf expeditioning. But, you know, I sit down every morning and write a little bit.
So, but this book is a fiction book. Mm-hmm. Now, why did you choose to write about fiction as opposed to nonfiction?
Again, it's not really choice. This is just what happens. He said, I'm an ordained Zen priest. That actually is a lot of where this comes from. Several years ago, I started meditating. And I do that at my full morning routine, is I meditate for an hour, and then I write. And what happens when you meditate, all the layers of conditioning and sort of this accreted self start flaking away, and the original person underneath, this creative little kid, starts flowering. So over the years, that little kid started seeing these things and started playing games with the keyboard, and out comes a book.
So do you find that writing like that actually energizes you and makes
Absolutely.
You a more productive
Absolutely.
Business person?
No question.
Okay, our audience is going to want to know what an ordained Zen priest is. I'm using the audience as a crutch because I don't know what the heck it means.
Well, you know, I'm not really sure. we have Zen is basically about meditating a lot, and we've got this group of people, and we all hang out and sit and stare at the wall a lot, and that's very reflective, very contemplative stuff. As one of the people who's been there for longer than most, I've found myself in a place where people look to me for guidance, look to me to run services and the like, and this is just, you know, growing into that position. It all looks a little odd when you look at it from the outside, but, you know, most traditions like that do.
Well, in just a moment, I want to talk more about your business life as well, because I get the sense that you have a great deal to offer our listeners along that vein. But tell us a little bit more about the book. I don't want to spoil it where people won't buy it, but give us a little bit of a preview.
I told you characters lived in my head. I'll give you three little vignettes, which really are the core characters, the central characters in the book. There's a teenage girl who is seduced by the preacher's son, and the seduction turns into a rape. And she finds herself crushed by horrible guilt. The preacher's son is exonerated by the community, by the church. And this is in a radically fundamentalist Christian community in the mm-hmm. small little village. So the preacher's son is exonerated by the community, and she is cast out by parents and by church as a fornicator. So again, she has this horrible crushing guilt. There's another story, which is a teenage boy, same church community. He discovers when he's in his late teens that the friendship he has had for all of his childhood with his best friend is actually more than a friendship. It becomes a homosexual relationship. When he discovers that he's gay, this is enormously crushing for him as well. And again, his parents can't stand this or can't deal with it. And so that's a devastating situation for him. And similarly, the church kicks him out. There's another story which actually comes from, I suspect it's Taoism, but it's an ancient Chinese story. There's a teenage girl who has a child, fatherless child. The villagers all say, "Who's the father? Who's the father?" And she won't tell them. And eventually, she gives up. She says, "Okay, it's the hermit up on the hill." So they haul her up there. They throw her on the ground in front of this cave, and the hermit steps out, and they say, "She says you're the father. Is that so? Well, my dear, I guess you'd better come in." So she comes in, and she brings the child with her. About 10 years later, a teenage boy shows up. Or he's not a teenage boy anymore. He's in his 30s, probably. Shows up at the village and says, "Where's the girl who had my child?" "Your child?" So they all go up to the cave, and they stand outside with the hermit. And the hermit comes out, and they say, "So he says he's the father." And the hermit says, "Is that so? Well, my dear, I guess you'd better go back and take your child to the child's father." So absolute selflessness.
Pretty even-keeled guy, this hermit. Right? He doesn't get rattled too easy, does he?
He doesn't, no. He doesn't. So you got these two tortured children, and they stumble into a character. And he actually, in this book, he comes out of the same church. You know, he's been in there, and he kind of grew up a little bit. And so there's a lynching in there. The FBI get involved. There's some bombings in Atlanta. I mean, it's a lot of action in there. But at its core, it's the journey of these people through this devastating guilt.
Well, I can't wait to read this book, and it's entitled The Grace of Guilt.
The Grace of Guilt.
And where can people find this book if they're not hosting radio shows and get their own free autographed copy?
You just Google The Grace of Guilt. You can find it on Amazon. I've got a website up for the book, which I'd encourage everybody to go look at, because I'm rather proud of the opening little vignette on the website. So The Grace of Guilt.
It's a really, really neat title. I would buy the book just because of the title. What was the inspiration behind that title?
I had a couple of working titles that were just pretty horrible. And one day I just woke up and that was in my head. So it stuck.
Well, and I want you to know, the High Velocity Radio Show has managed to make it a full 13 and a half months without using the word fornicator on the air. You pretty much shot that.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of an iconoclast from time to time.
Okay, so the website for the book, please say that again.
It's www.thegraceofguilt.com, and I also have Grace of Guilt, which forwards to The Grace of Guilt.
So there you go.
We're
good
pretty
point.
Much covered here.
Well, and it's a really neat webpage. You know, Todd and I have gotten to the point where we work with a lot of business authors. They're actually clients and consultants. Uh-huh. One of the reasons that we get a chance to do that is their websites aren't, well, they suck.
They're downright awful.
Right. And, you know, we step up and we help them unsuck a little bit, don't we?
Well, I'm looking forward to what Dee has to say later, but
yeah.
You know, I think I've already taken some of her advice to heart because I've got all the meta tags and stuff up there. So the site, I think, does pretty well in search engines and so forth.
Well, I really am. I'm sort of paid to say stuff like this, but I am genuinely excited about reading this book and so glad that you came on to share a little bit about it. And so now our listeners know about it, and we'll encourage them to go to that website and check it out. Let's shift gears here a little bit and talk about how you make the rent. What are you out there doing for folks? What kind of work do you do?
I spent 15 years... long, long time ago, I became a chartered accountant, came over here and became a CPA. I spent about 15 years at Bell South doing mergers and acquisitions, buying and selling businesses. I bought several businesses in Latin America, several domestically, and did an awful lot of alliances and joint ventures. I left Bell South about 4 years ago, and I spent the last 3 or 4 years doing a whole variety of different things. I was very lucky. The world just kind of stumbled into me and said, hey, Gareth, do you want to do this? We'll pay you for it. And it was very nice. Several months ago, I started having serious conversations with a company by the name of Abraxas Business Services. And I have recently signed up with them, which is kind of a return to the mergers and acquisitions business. It's a business brokerage firm. So what we do is we find people who own businesses roughly in the $5 to $30 million range, and work with them because at some point every business owner has to look at what comes next. They need to figure out how to evolve out of owning that business. Looks a lot like selling, right? So we work with business owners from a relatively early stage to help them dress up their exit strategy, think about how to position themselves for that exit strategy. And ultimately, we help them sell the businesses. We put together the offering memorandum and so forth and help them sell the businesses. And we also work with buyers, people who are interested in purchasing a business, help them figure out what kind of business they'd like, how much they can spend and all the rest, and then help them find the business of their dreams.
So what are some of the things that a business owner needs to be doing in preparation for exiting a business that they probably wouldn't think of without the benefit of some professional counsel from somebody like you?
The biggest single challenge is you have to step back and think strategically, and most business owners are so caught up in running the business that you can't step back. And
you know,
one of my clients once told me that it wasn't that he couldn't see the woods for the forest, he couldn't see the trees because he had bark marks on his forehead. And that's where a lot of business owners find themselves. You really have to, fairly simple things, you really have to make sure that you keep extremely good books and records, because we have to be able to present 3 or 4, 5 years of accurate financial and operational information, which allow you to draw out all the operating metrics as well as simple financial numbers.
Todd, you and I are not going anywhere.
We are never.
There is no exit strategy for High Velocity.
There is no exit strategy, absolutely not.
He has one stack of Post-its, I have the other, and we haven't even matched those up yet.
I've been there before. But if you want to talk afterwards, we can,
right.
We can have that conversation and start things going.
Well, we're $30 million-ish.
Kind of ish, if you add it all
ish.
Together.
Ish, yeah.
Ish. So ish maybe, being the key.
Maybe 30 million tweets. I don't know about dollars.
No. Yeah.
Do you find that business owners in that strata have a tendency sometimes to overvalue their business, think that it's worth more than
absolutely.
It is?
Oh, absolutely.
And so how do you work your way through that and tell them their baby's not necessarily, you know, butt ugly, but it's not as pretty as they think it is?
You just get to know people. I mean, you've got to earn people's trust. This is a business of trust because buying or selling a business is probably the single most important financial decision that any of these people will make in their lives. Mm. They're not going to do it lightly. So you don't go in and just kind of say, choose me. You get to know somebody and you earn their trust. And if you find that you and the business owner develop that kind of rapport, then you naturally kind of evolve to working with them.
So how does the sales and marketing side of your business work? Do most of these businesses seek you out, or do you knock on the door and say, you know, hey, Joe, you ever thought about selling your business, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. Most of business, as you know, and it's the way your business works, is friends of friends, right? Friends and friends of friends. And so right. You just get out there, and people know what you do. And, if somebody's in a neighborhood party and one of their neighbors is talking about what comes next in their life, they'll say, well, you know, I know somebody could help you. You ought to talk to Gareth.
Does a down economy like we're in now, how does that impact M&As or mergers and acquisitions and buying and selling? Does it increase it? Does it decrease it? Is it the same?
It affects it hugely. It's starting to come back out. It is coming back out of it right now. But the last year or two have been very poor in this business, in my business, which is an indication of lots of other things. The biggest single thing is money's dried up. People buying businesses don't put all their own money on the table. They're borrowing from banks and borrowing from sellers. And so the liquidity problems of the last couple of years have affected this business an awful lot. But it's starting to come out. It really is. And things are starting to move again, which is great.
It does seem that way. And I think sometimes it's a little bit of a mind game may not be the right phrase, but I think if people think things are coming out of it, then things are coming out. Yeah, it's coming out of it.
We bought a house earlier this year, and the realtor we worked with, lovely guy, very talented guy, he said 8 closings last month.
Oh, wow.
After a really dry period.
Right.
His philosophy was he had a lot of qualified buyers, but they were all looking at houses and not quite ready to move yet.
Right.
And suddenly it looks like people are starting to move. So that's happening in our business too, which is great.
Before we wrap up, I wonder if we could get just a little more tactical with you while we have you here. You mentioned financial disciplines and really doing a good job of capturing your financial data and having that available. Can you either walk us through some of the high points of a typical relationship with a client and map that out for us, or share a couple of other key high points that you would counsel people to do to get ready to sell?
Talk to somebody who's been through the process before. It's every business is different, and the key assets of every business are different. Businesses all have intellectual property, which you've got to make sure you own. You've got patents. You've got work-for-hire agreements rather than letting somebody else who's done the work own all your software. You've got to make sure that your employee relationships are tight. So if you're selling a business where key employees are important, that the people go with the business. Each business is different, so there's a need to just sit down with somebody who's been through this kind of process and look at where the hidden assets are, where the hidden liabilities are, and understand the business from that standpoint. One other observation I'll make about this is one of the hardest things when selling a business is to keep running the business while you're doing it.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Because the last thing that you can afford to happen is to see the numbers start to turn down in the middle of a sale process. And if you're running the business and running the sale process, you're going to be taking your eye off the business and the numbers are going to start to slip. So really up front, making sure you've got all your ducks in a row and then making sure that we have set up a decently managed process so the owner is not involved in the sale process except where absolutely necessary is really important.
Well, you know what this is reminding me of? Some of the folks that Todd and I have had the pleasure of consulting with, of course, our core market is the speaker, author, consultant. And so often that individual, that personality, that person's presence is such an important part of the mm-hmm. business. Mm-hmm. And I know they fear, and I think legitimately so, that it's going to be difficult to sell my business if I'm not part of it. I mean, so what do you do about that other than just be conscious of it and try to get it to not be that way? Huh?
Sometimes that's true. I mean, if the business is all about your own relationships with your customers, you're going to have a problem. So you've got to think strategically about how to run your business with an exit in mind. And you've got to think about how to evolve those relationships so it's not all about you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, at High Velocity, without me, the whole damn opera falls apart, Gareth.
It's been absolutely clear to me from the moment I walked in here, Stone, that was the case.
Stone, the fat lady's already singing, pal. So.
Well, Garrett, that has been an absolute delight having you on the show. A couple of things that we'd like to do before we let you go. One, I want to make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you so that they can learn more or get some counsel around this whole business of preparing to buy or sell a business?
Well, you can, of course, always just Google the book and you'll find me that way. There's email addresses
there
all over the place. The business is Abraxas, A-B-R-A-X-A-S, and my email is gyoung, Y-O-U-N-G, at abraxas.biz, B-I-Z.
Marvelous. Well, we also have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show, Gareth. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
I've made way more mistakes than I can count, and the biggest one I've made most recently is discovering this right as we went on air, so I haven't had a chance to filter it. A mistake I've made. The biggest mistakes I make, I can't think of a specific one, but the biggest mistakes I make are when I go into a situation thinking I know something, thinking I'm ready and I'm prepared and I know what's going to happen and I'm going to be the smartest bear in the room and I'm going to figure this out. And whenever I do that, I just fall flat on my face. And that's the lesson you keep on learning. I don't think I'll ever learn that one properly.
So the better default position in your experience is to assume you really don't have it all figured out. And then if you do, then you're that much ahead of the game. And if you don't, you don't get blindsided. Huh?
And life's just much more interesting that way, too. I mean, if you go in and you think you know everything, you got all your blinkers on and the world's closed. If you don't know, then you're open and all sorts of possibilities emerge. Actually, which...
Now he's got a mistake. Now I'm starting to
start. Now he's figuring it out. Yeah.
No, it's not really a specific mistake, but it's the things you don't know that you don't know. If you go in with your eyes closed, I can't tell you the things I've missed because I didn't even see them.
Well, I think that's excellent advice and excellent counsel, and I suspect that you have a great deal more to share with us and our listeners. I hope you'll come back sometime.
I would love to do so. It's been an honor and privilege to be on here, Stone. Thank you.
You are more than welcome. Well, who do we have next, Todd?
Stone, the next guest we have on High Velocity is one of those business communication and marketing gurus. She is the CEO of Jigsaw Business Communications. Welcome to the show, Dee Doans.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so project management, marketing strategy, communications training, internet marketing, copywriting, those are just some of the things that you do. Tell us a little about business.
Well, when I started my business about 7 years ago, I wanted to be able to provide clients with sort of like leadership that with creativity at the forefront, because a lot of times businesses need to step up their marketing and they don't quite know how to come up with good ideas. So that's where I come in. So I would say that I'm the head creative thinker when it comes to coming up with marketing campaigns that would draw more clients for my clients. And then also, too, another important step is for people that don't want to hire a full-time marketing person for their company, then I'm the one that will implement projects, come up with ideas, work with their team of salespeople and you know, their existing part-time marketing people to, you know, these campaigns. So say, for instance, a client, you mentioned earlier about having people having busted up websites. So say the website is not looking too good. You know, I would take a look at the website and say, okay, we need to fix these things, as well as having that tie into all the collateral materials. So, you know, all the printed materials, as well as the branding and messaging. That would just tie into the company's image, because, you know, you're not going to attract clients if the website's jacked up as well as all the collateral materials. It just won't be happening.
That's a new phrase for us. You know, we've been telling the authors your website sucks. Your website is jacked up, dude.
And I will say it to them just like that. I will. I don't mince any words. So.
I get the feeling that you're frank and open with your clients. That's, and they, frankly, they need that.
Yes, they do. So I do that. And so I help with the projects. I come up with strategies. A lot of them involve social media marketing, because, you know, you can't do anything without, you know, an internet presence, whether you are doing your LinkedIn, your Facebook, your Twitter. And a lot of times companies that say, well, you know, I just do traditional marketing. I don't need to do that. You know, I don't have a presence on the internet, but it doesn't make a difference because your client base, they're on the internet. So you have to implement those things. So I do a lot of stuff with social media marketing, and I tie that into traditional marketing.
The key is integrating it, isn't it?
It's
amazing to me. I saw a statistic that said 76% of small business people still don't see the value of social media. Amazing. Hey, we're going to get into social media in a minute. I love the name of your company, Jigsaw. Tell the story behind that name.
Well, I came up with Jigsaw because I thought of, like, you know, when you're looking at a puzzle and you're like, okay, well, I don't have this piece, but I need this piece. So if you want your business to be successful, you have all the pieces come together. So, you know, and I don't necessarily want people to be trying to hunt around for all the different pieces. That's what they have me for. And so that's where I came up with the name Jigsaw.
I like it. Another question for you. The way you described yourself and your business, which is a lot of the things I do with my company too, there's a million of us out there. Saying they can go to market and help people do those same things. How do you differentiate yourself from all the competition that's out there?
Wow, that is a very good question. I would say that I'm always thinking outside the box, and I'm not I'm unorthodox with a lot of my practices. So I'm the kind of person that will not necessarily go with what your team is saying the direction needs to be for a project. And I'm not scared to mince words. So I think outside the box and come up with things that that will stick out in someone's mind. You know, that's the main thing I would say.
What are some really early signs when you see a website that would indicate to you this is a jacked up website?
Well, believe it or not, I've seen some clients that have their nephews or other relatives work on the website with all kind of spelling errors, or it just, the colors are horrible. They may have polka dots and stripes and kind of tacky colors on there. And I said, well, my nephew needed the money, and he's just started his, you know, he does websites in his free time, and he's just started in college. And I'm like, okay, the website looks like crap. You know, you need to correct that. So, but for people that just have, you know, I guess moderate looking websites, I would suggest that one of the easiest things you can do to build up an email list would be to get an email collector button on your website. And a lot of times people don't understand that when people are browsing your website and say, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night, they're not going to call your office. If you have an email collector button saying, you know, here, click here to get a free report on, you know, how to start a radio show, you know, like say maybe this is you all's website, then they would sign up. They would get an autoresponder to send out to the client, you know, or the prospective client, an ebook that, you know, maybe 5 pages on the top 5 things you would do to start your radio show. Well, then you've already built in your mail list, and you don't have to buy a purchaser list, and then you can just keep sending out free information to that client. And then maybe the fourth or fifth email would be something where you're selling some products or services. So that would be my single most important advice that I would give anyone: email collector button. Other things for a website that someone can do is to have the have easy navigation buttons, have basic fonts. You know, your site cannot be hard to read. You know how sometimes people have those websites and it's such fancy script, you don't know what this is, and then when you try to click to buy something, you're unsure on which button, you know, to add things to your shopping cart. So little simple things, but sometimes, or a lot of times, the simple things are the complex things, and if you don't master them, you won't make any money off your website.
A lot of the problem with fonts, too, is that not all web browsers read all those fonts, and so you could have one cool font that works on Firefox, for instance, but it won't work on Internet Explorer. I mean, most people don't really realize those kinds of things.
That's true.
Do you do, I trust that you support and advise your clients on some PR strategies as well?
Oh, yes, I do. I used to do a lot more of PR consulting several years back, but I've gotten back into doing it now because people think of PR as like, yes, you know, it's Selma Hayek and she has a PR agent. Well, no, anyone can be PR. It can be as simple as getting a press release and putting it out there on, you can use PR Web, and there are a number of different services that on the web, on the internet that you can use to do a press release on a new product that you have launched, or a book. Like Gareth, you know, Gareth's book, he can do a PR release. You also can do in different groups, business groups, or on blogs. You can talk about, oh, this new product launch. You can also hire, you know, a PR agent. But to me, the best PR is when you're doing good work, people talk about you, and they will post about it on their Facebook page. You know, a lot of times people forget that, you know, when you have a Facebook page, if you have a good service or if you have a bad service, people are going to talk about it. A famous example is that is several years back when Dell was having horrible, horrible customer service issues. You know, the president, you know, of Dell got on there and he started interacting with the clients, the customers on Facebook. And people were like, wow, why is he doing that? But A, he addressed the customer service issues. That's what he did. And people, you know, they said, wow, they really care about what we think about the products. Number two, he was able to gather information and develop new and improved products. So he saved, like, I'm sure millions of dollars on that just by interfacing with the clients, because people don't lie on Facebook. People will say, yeah, I went into the whatever store, and those people were horrible to me. And they will say that. They're not going to lie on Facebook. They may lie on a survey that they take after, you know, using a service or buying a product, but they're not going to lie on Facebook. Everyone says all sorts of stuff on Facebook, as you know.
You talk about companies, bad PR and all that. Our audience and my community hates it when I travel because I usually fly Delta, which then leads to a rash of blog posts where I'm complaining and fussing about Delta. So so you really can get ahead of that. And companies ought to be monitoring those kind of things. We talked about social media a minute ago, and we talked about some or a lot of majority of businesses still not getting into it. When you come across a small business person who says, I'm doing traditional things, or I just don't see the value. How do you begin to convey to them the value and importance of that tool? I always tell my clients, it's not for everybody, but I've yet to find someone who could benefit from it. So,
well, social media, and I was discussing this with a friend of mine that deals with social media strategies with his business. The problem is that for small and even large companies, they don't see the ROI. They want an immediate ROI. And the thing about social media marketing is that it is a currency that is much more valuable, but you can't put a number to it. So it's simply just having a presence, being the expert, being consistent with your messaging. That is the best advice. So it could be that with the small business, they don't think it's important because it doesn't immediately affect their bottom line. But I can give plenty of instances where just because I'm on Facebook, all over the internet, really, just for myself, I have a potential client in Europe that, you know, I have a big deal that's getting ready to go down, and he found me on Facebook. And he came to me and said, I want you to help me with distribution for this item. And I said, well, I don't really deal with that. He says, but you know all these people, you go to all these events, you know the target demographic for what I'm trying to sell here in the U.S. And that's how, you know, I came across this big, huge contract. And he obviously had been observing me and studying me and talked to some people about me. But that's how I got that contract, because of me being...
Because of Facebook.
And being
so 100% of the... I mean, so if you make $1 billion from this deal, do you attribute that to social media?
Oh, most definitely.
When I met Stone 30 years ago, it was at a small business networking group. You know, so the millions and millions-ish that we're going to make, I'm going to attribute to face-to-face networking. I mean, is that how you do it? I mean, there's no other way to really do it.
Oh, yes, most definitely. That's why, you know, frequent posts on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, Facebook tends to be my favorite because you can do the pictures and the videos and all of that. Twitter, that's just too succinct for me. The little short, you know, URL, I can't deal with that.
I don't see you doing 140 characters. You don't strike me as that kind of girl.
No, and I can be a little long-winded, but I'm interesting. I'm not too boring. But, you know, so to me, Facebook is much more interactive. You know, I like that. So that's what I prefer.
I'm sorry that I had to step away for a moment. I had to call my nephew and fire him. But I'm back now, and I still have a ton of questions. One of which is video. What's your take on incorporating video in your website?
Well, I think that video is one of the best ways to, especially for converting people to do actual sales. If you look at YouTube, I mean, you got some of these crazy videos with dancing babies and the spoof of the Beyonce videos, you know, and things like that. I think video is interactive, and especially if you're, you know, have a good camera face. Some of us don't, so we should not do the videos. But for those of us that have good camera
Are you talking
face,
to anyone in particular at this moment?
No, not right now. But if you go on there and you do these videos, and then you could put them on your website, you could put them on Facebook, you can really just put them out there to promote your business. And one of the easiest techniques is to take like your top 10 questions that people have about your business or even your industry, and just do a Q&A. Do one video per question, and then you circulate these around, and you've done two things. You've told your existing clients, you know, answers to some common questions, and then your potential clients, you've sold them on your service. And especially if it's not done in a way where you're selling, you can't sell. It needs to be just something where, okay, if you want to clean this carpet, these are some common carpet fibers, this is that. You're not saying, hi, call these carpet cleaning services. Nobody wants to be sold, but people like to get tons of free information. And if the video is entertaining, you tell some jokes.
Or show people how to remove coffee stains, or show people how to, just little tactics. And you're not directly selling, but you're conveying expertise and a comfort level and trust. Yeah, you need trust even whether you're doing merger acquisition or whether you're selling carpet cleaning. You know, so we're all starting to see all the thought leadership and all the writing about the 2010 predictions. You know, all the trends in 2010 and all that. I'm seeing video, and every single one of them is the new hot thing that everybody's got to be doing on their marketing.
I guess it's a real tactical question around this, but what are your thoughts on the distribution platform for the video? And here's why I asked the question. I've been to some websites where I thought the video was really strong, but the only place you could see the video was on that website because it was in something other than like a YouTube-y kind of thing. And then I've been to other websites where, yes, you can see it on their website, but it was also on YouTube. And I guess I got the idea that if you have it on something like a YouTube, it's going to be more viral. And I was a little surprised at the sites that was the only place you could see it. Or is that a good thing because then you've got a captive audience?
Now, definitely, you need to put it on YouTube as well as some other video sharing sites. I mean, you have services like Traffic Geyser, which will, you know, put it out there for like hundreds of sites. But what is the point in having your video just on your site? What if people don't know how to find your website? On YouTube, you can create a YouTube channel and just have a whole bunch of your videos there. And then, of course, with the proper tag words, the site descriptions, and with specific SEO written descriptions and text, then that will populate very fast through the search engines. And plus, YouTube is, I mean, everyone's on there. You have so many categories, so you have to put it on YouTube. You just cannot have it just on your website.
Well, I'm glad I asked because I think that makes a lot of sense to me. A few moments ago, I think Todd mentioned to you that he found his meal ticket, me, at a networking event. And I know that you've made some observations around networking, and you speak to being careful about networking with the right group and not just any group. Can you say more about that?
Well, a lot of times people say, well, I need to go out and just network and just meet more people. You know, maybe they're looking for a job or looking for a new contract, and they just think just meeting just a ton of people will get them the right results. And actually, that's not so. You need to target, you know, the right people. So say you may need to go, say you're an engineer, you need to network with companies or with people that have access to engineering projects. And sometimes, and I hate to say it, some of these networking events, you know, here in our area, they don't really qualify to people. And I want to pre-qualify anyone that I network with or, you know, if I'm going to, you know, speak with anybody about, oh, I can help you, you can help me. I want to pre-qualify you, you know. Do you deal with small businesses? Do you have access to companies? Or are you a contractor? These are important things. And certain networking groups, they cater to specific people. And so you just have to do your homework so that way you're not wasting your time because time is money.
What surprises me is that there still seems to be this negative vibe about networking. It seems like it's the working man's way to market. You don't have a big marketing budget, so you have to network. And it's networking isn't going to the chamber mixer. We're networking in the studio right now. I've connected two people, our two guests, and that's a networking opportunity where you guys may foster a relationship. It just fascinated me how people a lot of people so still frown on own networking is for someone lesser than me.
Well, you know, and that is too bad because it doesn't have to be a formalized thing. Heck, you can network while you're looking like a bag lady in the grocery store. I mean, I took a business call, you know, in Whole Foods where I'm not looking too cute that day. I'm running a quick errand. But someone heard me talking about, you know, social media strategies. But can I get your business card real quick? And I'm in a grocery store. So networking is a everyday 24/7 occurrence to me. Even if you dream, you can network.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I always look like the wrath of God in a grocery store. So I haven't found any business online yet. But you talk about joint venturing is an important strategy. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, I mean, especially with this economy, a lot of times people, especially if you're used to, you know, just working with your team of people, you have to be creative to, you know, join with people that are in similar industries or complementary industries, you know, to make money. Would you rather make a piece of the pie or none of the pie? So if someone's not greedy and they're willing to share the resources and the workload, that is awesome. But, you know, make sure to choose somebody that's not just using you and won't do any of the work. And, you know, I've done that before and I'm like, oh, my God, this is a, you know, horrible thing. They have me doing all this work. But JVs are like awesome. I would recommend anyone to approach somebody that even if you don't have enough experience with your company, but you have the resources, you know, that might be a good fit with someone that is a larger company that you can joint venture with to make some money on some projects.
All right. Well, we're about out of time. So a couple of things. How can our audience find you? What's your website, your phone number, your email? What grocery store do you shop at?
Well, besides Whole Foods, okay. Well, you can go to ddoanes.com, DEEDOANES, and then my marketing website is JIG, that's JIG, -sawmarketing.com, and my phone number is 404-856-9188.
Okay, great. Now, you saw us put Gareth on the hot seat, so it's your turn now to share with us a mistake that you've made in your career, and more importantly for our audience, what you learned from that.
Okay, well, I think that probably the biggest mistake I made was not being able to fire a client that needed to be fired. And by that I mean is having a client, because especially if you're just starting out, you need the money. And maybe they are closed-minded, they're difficult to work with, they're not open to change. I find that for me, what's most important is me being happy doing my work. I'd rather work for someone that's not going to pay me as much, but I'll be happier because they're easier to work with. They're positive. You have less problems. Maybe, you know, these signs when someone's so difficult, maybe they may not want to even pay you the rest of the money they owe you. So I find that just by not making it all about the money and making it about yourself and being happy at what you do, that's the most important thing. Sort of like what Gareth was talking about. You know, you have to have this positiveness in your life. So I just find that is the best way to do business. And a lot of times, too, when you have that initial bad vibe about a client, usually it's always found out as some kind of crap, you know, in the end where, you know, they're unethical or some kind of stuff is going on.
They're jacked up.
So that is the best way for me to do business because you're not here just to, you know, be working. You're here to enjoy your life and to make other people money while you're making money, too.
That's great advice about firing clients, because too many people don't do that when they really need to. I find that the 80-20 principle applies in so many different ways about your client base, where 20% of your clients can generate 80% of your revenues, but 20% of your clients can also cause 80% of your headaches, and sometimes you just got to do it. So that's great advice. Well, it was a real thrill and a real pleasure and honor for us to have you on the show today. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much.
Stone, what did you think? Good
Fooled
show.
Them again.
Yep. Yep. Another tough day at the office for us.
Oh, it was marvelous. No, it was a blast.
Yep.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Gareth Young, Dee Domes, our producer Lee Cantor, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.